Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to All Stats Aren't We, a podcast in which two fans cast their combined eye over goings-on at Leeds United, giving scrutiny to the underlying statistics and tactical footings at work at Elland Road. I'm John McKenzie, now 11 days into self-isolation and counting, and I'm joined by Josh Hobbs, who is a few days behind me. Josh, how are you doing?
Yeah, good, mate. It's crazy times, but I'm doing well. As I was saying to you before we came on, self-isolation with two-year-olds is a challenging thing, but doing well. We're healthy.
It's a brave new world out there, isn't it? It's very strange. But let's not talk too much about coronavirus because Lord knows we've all talked about it too much already. We've had a fun few days, I think, just watching back over some games, which is what is going to be the main bulk of our time in conversation. But I thought there was maybe a few things we could just talk about a little bit before that. Firstly, obviously, the patron saint of this show is Adam Forshaw, and there was an interesting article with Graham Smith, who spoke to Adam recently about his experience of going through the injury woes that he's had this season. He ended up having to stop playing and eventually just constantly falling back under the same hip injury, and so he went to Colorado, had a hip operation, and is now sort of on the way back by the looks of it. So I guess you read that piece. Did you read that? Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Any takeaways from that? Some interesting facets into his experience, right?
Yeah, I mean, mentally it must have been really hard, because I think originally it was just a niggly thing that I think he thought maybe he would be managing it for the season. But I don't think he ever thought it would stop him playing, or he might miss a game here and miss a game there. But yeah, I think it came as a shock to him that ended up wiping out his season. Yeah, that's seeing your team go through a great run that we went through that he didn't get to be a part of, then the team fall apart, and probably thinking to himself, oh, I wish I could be out there and affecting this situation. And then for the team to go back on an amazing run again and suddenly think to himself, they're going to win promotion and I'm going to have only played a small part of it at the start of the season. Must have been a really weird thing, but I guess he'll be hoping, like all of us, that the season finishes, we get promoted, and he's a Premier League player in the summer.
Yeah, I thought it was really fascinating just hearing him talk about it. It throws a lot of light, doesn't it, onto the experience that we had, which was the club are basically lying to us about Forshaw. Why can't they just tell us what's going on? But it gave a sense, I think, a real sense of how involved the player is in the decision-making process of how you deal with that kind of injury, because clearly Forshaw kept thinking he was about to come back and then he would have another setback. And even when it came to having the operation, it took him a week, 2 weeks away under the advice of Rob Price to just make his mind up about whether or not he was going to have the operation. And even when he flew out to Colorado, it wasn't guaranteed that he was going to have the operation until a couple of days before he was still making his mind up. I found that really interesting.
Yeah, I thought that too. I thought the thing that I found surprising was almost him saying that Rob Price basically seemed to think at a much earlier stage, this is going to need surgery. And it was, if I read it right, it was sort of Forshaw who kept thinking, no, I think I can get through this. But I would have, I don't know, at what point did, could the club just have maybe tried to take that out of his hands? And at least knowing, if Rob Price knew that that early, why would the club not have thought, all right, there's a really strong chance of this. We probably should get another midfielder. Unless they were just really banking on the fact that Shackleton would come back fit and he would be that player. And he has made contributions, but he's still not starting games, really. He's just making 20-minute cameos here and there.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I don't know what the club protocol is. I wonder why. I mean, I guess part of the problem is that one of the mantras of club physios is that you can't really know if you're ready or enough to play unless you are the player themselves. So I think a huge amount of the information they're working off is how the player is feeling. And if, I mean, the Charlton game, for example, where Forshaw came back and played 45 minutes and then got injured again. That was a game that he'd passed the fitness test for like a few days earlier. So it's one of those things where it was clearly a complicated issue. And it clearly must have been doing more damage than good to try and get him fit again. And I guess it's just a good thing, really, that he actually went ahead, bit the bullet, had that operation and is now fighting fit and is now considering himself to have a few more years left in his body, which is good. It's something that we've been doing, obviously, this week is watching games that Forshaw was playing in. And I think it really strikes me anyway, just how good Forshaw is when you watch back and you see the role that he plays in the central midfield, and we don't really have anyone who's able to sort of play his role. So it will be good to have him back and have, yeah, I mean, Jamie Shackleton is a player that I know you're especially big on, but I'm increasingly excited about every time I see him play, but he's just not quite at Forshaw's level. So
no, different player as well, really different stylistically.
Yeah, I think that he's more of an attacking eight than Forshaw is, and I guess that's the question, right? Where who do we have who's going to fill in for Forshaw, right? It's not the easiest situation. I think the reason why Shackleton hasn't played as much is because Mateus Klik is ahead of him and is, again, probably better in that position than Shackleton's going to be. And so it's a difficult question there as well. Did you want to add anything on Shackleton? Because I know you're a fan.
No, not necessarily. I really like him. I think it's a shame that he's had injuries this season, because I think he would have got a lot of minutes. But yeah, I think I'm still high on him, and I hope that he makes contributions going forwards, and I think he could develop into a really exciting player.
Before we get onto the main topics that we're going to discuss, so we've picked five games with a little bit of advice from you guys, just through the Bielsa tenure, to look at the development of the team under Bielsa. And we've watched those five games. Some we've had overlap on some, but we've not been able to watch all of them, obviously. But the question that really pushed this sort of approach in this episode into our minds was the question about which game was the best game under the Bielsa tenure. And it's something that I've been thinking about a lot, actually, and I'm not entirely sure how I would go about answering it, but I think now that we've both watched five games, four of which were last season and one of which was right at the beginning of this season, I think we would both agree that the best football being played under Bielsa is definitely this season rather than last season. But I wondered if you would like to pick a game that you think is probably the best game in the Bielsa era.
It's difficult, this one. I think my personal favourite, even though when we get into this, the next bit, I'll explain why I don't think it was the best. But my personal favourite is still the first league game, which is the 3-1 versus Stoke, because it was just such a shock to the system. And I think that was one of the ones that we got requested a lot when we put the question on Twitter about doing this podcast, because it was just like, I describe it as like an awakening of like, oh my goodness, this team, like what has happened to this team? Because this is like relegation fodder players from the season before, just turning in what looked at the time to be this incredible performance. But as you see the progression under Bielsa, our play is so much better now than it was then. I think, yeah, the 4-0 against West Brom, which we'll talk about later, that's got to be one of them. Weirdly, the Cardiff 3-3, we can't say that was the best because of everything that happened there in the end. But in terms of our attacking play, that was our best performance in terms of our XG generated in that game was the highest that we've had under Bielsa. We broke four. We broke four XG in that game. Just unfortunately, we just crumbled defensively. We did some sloppy things in the end, which stopped that game from being remembered for all the amazing stuff that happened in that game. Another one that stands out to me that was an amazing performance, but we didn't end up with 3 points, was the 1-1 draw with Derby from this season, because we limited them to only one shot from inside the box, which we all know they scored from, and denied us the win. We created almost 3 XG in that game. Unfortunately, we missed a penalty. But yeah, that was one of those games where we absolutely dominated them, completely deserved the win, shut them out of the game. But just we had that horrible luck that the one shot on target that they had went in the goal. So I sort of feel, in performance sense, that one for me was almost our complete performance, but which is going to sound like people are going to think I'm mental for just talking about two games that we didn't win. But I'm just being a bit, maybe I'm going for the rogue opinions.
I certainly think that the football being played this season is better than last season, so I don't really consider last season's games to be really the pinnacle of performance-wise. Even watching the West Brom game back, we played some nice stuff, but there's still a lot of stuff in there where you can see that the team is still working on attacking patterns and stuff, and you see a lot of breakdowns, whereas this season now we're really starting to see relentless attacking. For example, someone like Luke Ayling, even, but we're going to go on and talk about this, but I'll try and restrict myself to just talking about what I think the pinnacle performance was. I suspect that the best performance this season came at the beginning, just because in those first five games, yeah. I know we drew with Forest, but those first five games before we had that loss against Swansea, and then we sort of started leeching points in fairly unfair ways. I thought that was probably our strongest.
Yeah, I agree.
Our strongest period, and so the question is, out of those games, which was the best one? And I think, the Bristol City game was good, but we did give away a goal. The Brentford game, I think, was okay, but I think maybe the Stoke City game, then, the one that we looked at, the 3-0, was probably the most complete performance under Bielsa.
Yeah.
And then after that, you sort of have Forshaw out for a bit, and things kind of fall a little bit apart after that. But I suspect that was probably the Stoke City game, I think, is almost the most complete Leeds team under Bielsa. I think the only thing is you have Alioski maybe playing instead of Dallas. It'd be fun if we came back with everyone fit and healthy and we could just play our strongest team for the rest of the season. I really, really couldn't see us looking back if that was to be the case. But let's get on, because we've got five games to get through and we've got plenty to talk about. So
yeah.
The first game that we looked at was the 3-1 game against Stoke, first game of the Bielsa tenure in the Championship. Leeds played 4-1-4-1, and actually it was really interesting looking back at that game, because we pretty much still play like that now for the most part. This is one of the first few games where we see Calvin Phillips playing in the defensive midfield role, which was exciting for us. They had Alioski on the left wing at this point, and Roof up front, so it's still quite different. Just a few comments about what was different. Samu Saez was playing, and I'd be interested to hear your thoughts on him. Luke Ayling, very interesting. The back four are very, very were very, very tentative, I thought, in that game. So they played as a flat back four, really. You don't see Ayling getting forward much at all. And I think that we had Barry Douglas on the left, and Douglas was a lot more progressive than Ayling was at this point. As well as that, I think the wide play was a lot narrower, so we didn't see quite so much. Obviously, without someone like Harrison playing, who really benefits from being in a wide area. Actually, Alioski and Hernandez were both coming inside quite a lot, and then leaving space for the, at least on the left, for Douglas to overlap into. And that's completely different from the way that we play now. So those were the sort of ideas that we saw in that game. In many respects, I think, I don't know, you'll probably want to talk about the XG, because in many respects we weren't fortunate to win the game, but I think Stoke outplayed us in terms of XG. It probably should have been closer to a draw. But I don't know. I've not actually looked in detail at the, we've got the Stats Bomb data on that, but it depends whether or not you take into account the penalty, right? Because the penalty...
Yeah, the penalty skews it, for sure. Yeah. So before they won the penalty, they had like 0.25 XG. So the penalty took them to over 1 XG. At the same point in time, we were at nearly 1.5. So we were completely smashing them up until that point. The penalty brought the game a lot closer, because that contributes 0.77 XG, right. So that's an enormous amount. And then we have our last shot of the game in the 70th minute, before they then bring on Fletcher, Bojan and Crouch, and they start pinging balls up to Crouch. Crouch causes a few problems, and Bailey Peacock Farrell makes a couple of saves. So I mean, the XG has it as 1.85 to Stoke, 1.74 to Leeds. But the story of the game is clearly that Leeds were dominating. Stoke got a penalty to get back into it when we were 2-0 up. We quickly scored the third goal that took the game away from them. And then they had a late sort of barrage of balls into the box. So I would say
they have
that,
a big chance at the end, don't they?
Yeah,
which is
a big chance.
In injury time, which takes them ahead of Leeds.
Yeah, exactly.
I'd say it's probably about 0.3, so it's probably just a big chance.
But
before, it's interesting that Leeds dropped off around the 70th minute. They don't seem to really do much after that. They give up two big chances. But
I don't think we were at our... Yeah, we weren't at our peak level. So in it now, you would if Leeds were 3-1 up against a team like Stoke now, I think we would sort of ease away from them.
We've got a good comparative, right?
Yeah.
In the game, in that we looked at the game this season, and it's completely different. Again, the three goals scored, but we just didn't give up anything. And I guess that's the difference between then and now. The Leeds in the first part of this season. We're just so much more controlling, and that makes the difference. But yeah, I mean, this was a really standout performance in terms of the fact that you can already see the ideas that that Leeds are going to go on to do for the rest of the season and the rest of their time under Bielsa. But interesting one, because if you listen to the commentary, I think it was Andy Hinchcliffe was a co-commentator, and he's just gushing about Leeds the whole time. So it's an interesting one, because Leeds are dominating the ball, and they're completely controlling it, and they're moving the ball through the areas quite nicely. Yeah, there's a lot of false passing up front, where players are passing it into space and it's not anticipated. But if you look at the game itself, Leeds deserve to win comfortably, despite what the XG says. So I think it's already sort of weird premonition for what the rest of Bielsa's time is going to be like. I think at Leeds, it's like large stretches of the game are controlled. You do give up big chances, but you still get the sense when you're watching the game that Leeds aren't really under any problems, or aren't really facing huge amounts of pressure. So I think it's quite interesting how you get from that position, which we probably were at most of the season, to the position we were at the beginning of this season, where Leeds were just in so much control. It just didn't look like they were ever going to win anything, lose anything, which is why I think the expected points models from this season just had them so high, because they were just next level. They were comfortably the best team in the championship.
The Samu Saiz thing, found it interesting watching how differently we played with him, actually. I think that there are elements when Tyler Roberts plays in midfield, where he does some similar things that Saez did, which is essentially pick the ball up in the middle of the pitch, back to goal, and he would always look to sort of roll his man who was marking him tightly, and then sprint away, drive through the middle of the pitch, carrying the ball through the middle. Now that we have Hernandez basically playing in that role, that's totally different because he progresses the ball a lot more by passing. But I loved watching Saez. It's such a shame everything that happened with him, because he was just a lovely player to watch, and I think he would have been another sort of another string to our bow going forwards.
Leeds would have played quite differently, I think, if we'd have had him in the long term.
Yeah.
Which is quite fascinating, because obviously Bielsa sees Hernandez playing in that wide right area. He has him there from the very beginning. And then he's still got Click, I suppose, playing in the midfield. I wonder what the midfield would have looked like with a decision between like Calvin Phillips, Forshaw, Click and Saez. I don't know which way he would have gone. I suspect Click probably wouldn't have made it.
Not initially, because he only came in. He only came in to start on the first game of the season because Forshaw injured his foot right before the start of the season. So the midfield was set to be Phillips, Forshaw, Saez. And then Forshaw came back fit, and Saez dropped off a bit in form when Hernandez got injured. So I think they dovetailed well together. They sort of created space for each other, and he was sort of carrying the creativity with Hernandez out. So when Hernandez came back, Saez dropped out, and we started to have a midfield three of Phillips, Click, Forshaw, and Hernandez was sometimes in the centre. But it was quite different. I think Click benefited from having Saez in midfield as well, because it's sort of, I think he drew defenders towards him, and Click could often get into the box more than he's able to do now. So when I've looked at shot maps for Click from last season compared to this season, he was taking so many more shots sort of from beyond where the striker would be, and he's not really done that this season, which is just an interesting aside, not so much from that game, but he obviously scored the first goal by breaking into the box, going beyond Roof and being slipped the ball by Saez. So yeah, I miss Samu.
I wonder if whether or not the fallout with Samu was with regards pressing, because I know we're constantly arguing about whether or not we play a 10 or not, and I just don't see Click as a 10 just because he presses so much comparative to someone like Samu Saez. And I wonder whether or not the aggressive pressing would work quite so well if we'd continued with Saez, whether or not that was the reason why he was almost forced out, whether or not Bielsa was like, you know what, if you give me a choice between Samu Saez and Mateus Click, I'm going to choose Click. But that's obviously hugely speculative. But I can't even imagine playing the sort of flamboyant number 10 that Saez is now. I don't know whether or not you have any thoughts on this.
I thought in this game he pressed well, but I think perhaps as it went on, he maybe, like as the fixtures went on, he started to not press as much. But interesting thoughts. But I think in the end it was family stuff of why.
Yeah, there was all kinds of things, wasn't there?
Yeah.
Let's move on to the next game, because I'm aware of time. I don't want us to rush the last few games. Sheffield United 0, Leeds United 1 in December of 2018. I haven't rewatched this game, so I'm going to rely heavily on you for this one. So do you want to talk us through this one a little bit?
Yeah. So this was one that we played the 3-3-1-3, which we didn't really play very much last season. So we had Calvin Phillips at the back, starting on the right-hand side of the back three, with Pontus in the middle and Cooper on the left. Cooper got injured after about 20 minutes and came off. So Apo Halm came on, dropped in at the deep end, and then he went to the right centre-back and Calvin came to the left. centre-back. But this was a really interesting one because we didn't really control this game. So it's different to all the other ones because we won this game despite having less possession, which is, it's very rare for Leeds to have less possession than our opponents. Another interesting thing about this game is Roof started up front, as he did for pretty much all the first half of the season. But about half an hour in, Hernandez is switched from the right into playing as a centre forward, and Roof goes to right wing, which that was sort of a unique situation. We didn't see that at any other time in the season. We obviously saw Hernandez play centrally, but never like as the furthest forward. He was always in a sort of attacking midfield role. This season, we've seen that a little bit with Costa, but only for short periods of games if we just want to release his pace, or literally if we're playing a long ball and Bamford pulls out right, Costa comes inside. But this was literally like from the half an hour point in the game, Hernandez is central, Roof is on the right. I don't know if it was a sort of a pressing thing, so Roof's pace to press the wing backs and try to stop the overlapping centre backs of Sheffield United. But I just found that a really interesting point. And the winning goal is scored by Hernandez being in that central position. I think I'd compare that game to one from this season, which was us beating West Brom at home, where we dominated parts of it, other parts we were sort of hanging on. And there were definitely points in this game at Bramall Lane where Sheffield United had us on the rack. McGoldrick had a good chance that Peacock Farrell saved well with his feet. Billy Sharp missed what you would expect him to score, a bit of a sitter of a header at the back post. The difference in the West Brom game from this season was Bamford up front, who was sort of always gave us an out ball, and he was always fighting with the JI and Bartley, whereas in this Sheffield United game, with Hernandez playing as the centre forward, we didn't necessarily have that same out ball. Yeah, and this is a big game for Jack Clarke. He came on in the second half. He actually didn't do a lot. He had a few little moments, but he got the assist for the winning goal by pressing Dean Henderson into a mistake, which was lovely. And it's just about this time that Clarke was having a run of games of being excellent off the bench.
I guess my question for you would be this. I mean, we've mentioned that this is one of the few games where Leeds play in a 3-3-1-3. Now, when we talk about formations, generally what we tend to mean is the formation that the team adopts in their defensive phase.
Yeah.
So Leeds will often form a sort of 3-3-1-3 in possession of the ball, and that's their sort of attacking lineup. So when you say that Leeds are playing as a 3-3-1-3 here, usually they're defending as a 4-1-4-1. And when they play 3-3-1-3 in an attacking situation, they will then drop back and the wing backs will drop in and the wingers will drop in and the central midfield, defensive midfield will usually push forward because he'll have dropped between the two centre-backs. Do you get a sense that Leeds were... You've said that they were clearly not quite so comfortable playing the 3-3-1-3. Did you get the sense that they weren't comfortable defending in the 3-3-1-3? Is that what the issue with it was? Because I mentioned that because watching the Stoke game actually at the beginning of this season back, they play a sort of 3-5-2 weird hybrid. And one of the things that we're going to talk about is how in Bielsa's second season, he's much more comfortable with doing weird things with the squad, doing really creative things tactically, but last season was pretty much 4-1-4-1 all the way, with a few games where they play against teams where there's two strikers. So you've got Birmingham. I think they played both of those games 3-3-1-3.
Yeah, and we lost them both.
Yeah, sure. So I wondered whether or not you could see like any obvious defensive errors in this game, or whether or not you think it was okay.
I think this is quite a weird one, because we had, obviously, as I said, Apo Helm one side, Calvin Phillips the other side, and Pontus in the middle. So I think that three sort of was a little bit unfamiliar. So I think that didn't help. Also, this was a game where Stuart Dallas was playing as the right-sided wing-back, which he didn't do very many times last season. He's done it loads of times this season and been brilliant at it. But last season, he didn't do that very much. So he was even, like, him being there was one of our normal players being missing. Ayling wasn't there. Douglas was left wing-back. I thought Douglas was probably the best of the sort of back five, so to speak. I think it just seemed unfamiliar, so there were some mistakes. And I also think they didn't look so good passing the ball between each other. So it was Leeds were losing the ball, playing the ball out from the back, and then turning it over to Sheffield United, and so they were sort of attacking us again and again because we were playing the ball forwards in a way that we wouldn't normally.
Anything else that you wanted to say about this game then?
Yeah, just that I think it was a very interesting one to see us
underdogs, I guess.
Yeah, it was really, and it, yeah, when you contrast it with the other Sheffield United game from that season, where we completely dominated them, had over 60% possession, had all the shots. And then ended up losing 1-0. It's sort of really quite weird to think that this was the one that we came out with the 3 points. And at that point in time, it felt like a really important win that put us top of the league. So it was a shame that it wasn't followed up with the home game. But it's interesting that Leeds do tend to win in games that we don't dominate possession. I know that that's very few. Like, you can count the amount of games that we have a lesser share of possession on one hand, but we've pretty much won all of them.
And I guess that's a real testament again to this notion that we're developing, which is that Leeds play better this season than they did last season.
Yeah,
I think it's arguable whether or not Leeds were the best team in the league last season. I suspect they probably weren't, but I don't think there's any doubt about them being the best team in the league this season. And it'd be interesting, I think, to have this season's Leeds in last season's competition, because I think the whatever gap there was between Leeds and Sheffield United and Norwich would certainly be a lot smaller, if not inverted, this time round.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Let's go to Derby, the Derby game. This is the Spygate game. Again, this is another one that I didn't watch. I watched the other two. So I'll let you talk about this one.
Yeah.
There's maybe an argument that this was the best game last season.
Yeah.
So
I think it was. Yeah. So, Leeds win 2-0. Jack Clark makes his full debut, starting right wing, which is a different dimension to the attack at that point in time. We were played a lot wider, as you said in when we talked about the Stoke game, where we were quite narrow. In this game, we had Jack Clark going outside the fullback on the right hand side. We had Jack Harrison going outside the fullback on the left hand side, and Alioski was at this point now at left back. So maybe a bit more similar to this season, where we've got Costa going outside on the right, Harrison going outside on the left. Clark absolutely killed Max Lowe and got the assist for Kamar Roof. And he didn't get the assist for Harrison's goal, but he provided the initial cross that Alioski turned back in to for Harrison to tap in. have to talk about Adam Forshaw in this game, because it was genuinely just a pleasure to watch him in it. He was flawless playing defensive midfield. I've said a lot of times that I generally prefer him as an eight, sort of linking between the defensive mid and into the attack. But he was just brilliant in this game. He had 93% pass accuracy, 100% accuracy for long passes. So that's 6 out of 6. So he would just ping it out to the left regularly. He engaged 14 defensive duels, recovered the ball 15 times, 7 of them in Derby's half, made 3 interceptions. So yeah, it was a complete midfield performance from him. And to really explain Leeds' dominance in this game, we won a penalty in the first minute, which was wrongly overturned for an offside call. We had 64% possession. Derby only had 2 shots on target in the whole game. They attempted only 33 passes in the final third in the whole game, completed only 21 of those. Leeds had over double that. Y-Scout has a pressing metric called passes per defensive action. So that means basically how many passes we allow the opposition to make on average before we attempt to win the ball back from them. And Leeds were the best in the league for that metric over the season, with an average of 6.3. But in that game, it was 4.8. So we were already the best in the league in terms of trying to win the ball back the fastest. But in that game, 4.8 is just unbelievable. Like, they literally couldn't get a kick. Every time they got the ball, there was a swarm of Leeds bodies over them. A couple of little interesting things. Roof scored his last goal in the league in this game, and it was in January. So he racked up 3.86 XG from that game onwards until he scored again in the playoff semi-final. And that was quite a big problem for us in the second half of the season. Obviously, he wasn't always playing as the number 9 from that point on, but that sort of tells a bit of a story. Also, Bailey Peacock-Farrell was lucky not to give away a stupid penalty, as he kicked Dwayne Holmes in the head. and he did a bit of sweeping, which he looked pretty uncomfortable with. And this season we've seen Kassia do that a lot more comfortably. Not sure if we're going to be seeing him again in a Leeds shirt, but we don't know yet how Meslier does his does the sweeper-keeper role, but just thought that was interesting. And the other thing to say, just on the XG, and this is my last thing on this one, they pretty much flat-lined. They had 0 XG for 35 minutes of this game. They never got above 0.45 in the whole game, and they didn't have a shot after the 80th minute, whereas Leeds, we got 2.56 XG in this game, just steadily racking up chances. And in the simulating all those chances, it has Leeds winning that game 90% of the time, which is it just tells you that we just utterly dominated that game.
Just looking at the graph now, and it looks like Leeds got more XG in the first 10 minutes. Well, just about around the 11-minute mark, Leeds had a chance which took them higher in terms of XG, pretty much the Derby did the whole game. They have a really outside chance at around the 78th yep. minute that maybe takes them above Leeds' XG total after 11 minutes. So yeah, it was a real job that was done on them. That was a very pleasant game.
Yeah, we killed them.
I guess it was up there with the point at which everything felt like it was great and we were going to go up. Because, we've got the West Brom game next, which was the West Brom game the one that came after the QPR loss, where we were all panicking, being like, oh, you know, we should be really doing this, but we've fallen off a little bit. And then we had that 4-0 win against West Brom. I'll talk about this. It was good to go back and rewatch this. I think, again, it was another game where Leeds were fairly dominant for the most part, as you would expect in a game where they won 4-0. Tyler Roberts was playing in this game, which is really quite fun. And we saw the Tyler Roberts that I think we all have grown to know and love now. I think the interplay between him and in Bamford was great, and probably that is the player that, for all we said about Samu Saiz potentially not pressing as much, but Tyler Roberts really, when he comes in, he really obviously makes a difference in terms of the creative side of things. That said, despite this was the fact that this was a good game, I thought for the most part, it still felt very basic in terms of the attacking movements and the rotations and the interchange. Now, that could be that Tyler Roberts obviously was not a regular and never has been really during the Bielsa reign. So maybe there's something to say about that. And this must be one of the first games that Kiko Casilla comes in, it being the January of 2019. So I presume we just picked him up in that transfer window. So you're already seeing, I think, the obvious benefit of having Kiko Casilla over Bailey Peacock Farrell. Incredible amount of intensity at the beginning of the game. It really struck me, actually, just how much Leeds went out after West Brom. I wonder whether or not that was because Bielsa had detected that they were a little bit shaky under physicality. But it was a remarkably intense pressing, which was quite fun to see. This was the game where you have that wonderful goal from the beginning, where basically from the kickoff, the ball is pinged forward by West Brom. I think Liam Cooper heads it forwards, and Jack Harrison runs down the wide, pulls it out wide to Pablo Hernandez, and he clonks it into the top corner. So I'm convinced that that probably has an impact on the resulting win. I think you can compare that with the Borough game where we won 4-0 this season, where there was a very early goal in that game. And I suspect that... That's why, and we haven't really talked about psychology much, but I do think that there is that tendency for Leeds to just be a dominant side when the game state favours them. And I think that probably agrees with these two games. You've mentioned Alioski's pressing, but we've always known that Alioski's pressing is very good. I think that's one of the reasons why he is preferred over other players in certain situations. One of the reasons why Bielsa likes to bring him on late in games is because you know that he's just gonna be brutal, essentially closing down the ball and pushing very hard. You've talked about the nice second goal. Do you want to talk us through that?
Yeah, I just noticed that was a move that we played a few times over that season. So basically, the ball comes in from the sort of inside left channel, played into a forward who is back to goal on the edge of the box, and they just sort of dink it round the corner with the outside of the foot, and there's another runner coming on from there. So Alioski scored against Norwich early on in the season, where Roof played the ball outside the foot round the corner. In the first game of the season, we tried it where Roof did that. It went through to Alioski. Butland made a save. And in this game, it's Tyler Roberts that receives it on the edge of the box. He plays it around the corner. Bamford runs onto it and scores it. And I just thought that's clearly a pattern routine that they've played a lot of times through in training. I haven't really seen us doing that much this season, but I picked it up in several of our games from last season.
And again, looking at the XG plot, you've got the same situation where Leeds have outscored. I mean, it's not quite so bad as the Derby game, but they've outscored the XG that West Brom are eventually going to produce in the whole game by at this point, maybe 28 minutes. So it's just incredible, outperformance of the opposition. Yes, it's only 1.71 XG to Leeds in the end to West Brom's 0.61. So Leeds are being remarkably efficient. And again, you know, you're not going to see games like this really where Leeds aren't being efficient. But another example of a game where Leeds are just dominating the XG from very early on, and it taking a long time for the opposition to get anywhere near them.
I just think it's remarkable that if other people could see what John and I are seeing here, you would see these lines, sort of the Leeds line climbing up steadily over 90 minutes with a few big jumps where we create some big chances. But you would see the West Brom line just stop after 50 minutes. And that means they don't have a single effort at goal after 50 minutes in the game. So they're 2-0 down at that point. It's not even 3 or 4-0 yet. And they don't get another shot on goal. That is crazy.
Control.
Like, yeah, we've completely killed them there.
I feel
like we've been robbed of... I was hopeful that we might put together a performance like this in the Fulham game that was due to be this evening. Because I think there are similarities to West Brom last season and Fulham this season, where they had some very good individuals with Rodriguez, Gale, some of those other players that they had, Livermore, some really good individuals for the Championship, but they weren't a good team in terms of their tactics. And I'd have liked to have thought that we could have killed Fulham in the same way. Maybe we still will, but I feel that when I watched this, I thought this is what we could do to Fulham.
I find it interesting that people think this is our best game, because I don't think it was by a long way. And again, I think it just comes down to that game state thing, which is once we get ahead, we get ahead, and we're just a bit more efficient. The same thing happened with Borough this season. That came in at a point where we weren't really producing much, but then we just got that early goal and then we flew from there. So
I think the reason why that is the thought is because the opponents were one of the teams that were near the top of the league
and had beaten us 4-1.
Yeah, had thrashed us earlier on in the season. And any time you beat a team 4-0, particularly one of your rivals, it's gonna look like a really good performance, and it's gonna feel perhaps like a bigger. It's going to feel like a better performance than maybe it was, but it was maybe one of our best results, but maybe not our best performance. And not to say it was a bad one, because like I said, they didn't have a shot after 50 minutes. We won 4-0, and they looked awful in comparison to us. So not to pour cold water on this game, but just I agree that we have actually been better. I think we were better in the Derby game, and I think we've been much better this season.
Let's move on to the last game then, and let's begin the discussion with a question of, like, why do we think Leeds are better this season than last season? And I guess we chose the Stoke game. We tried to avoid, by way of explanation, we tried to avoid games this season because I think a lot of them are still quite fresh in our minds. So we did talk about the possibility of looking at the Cardiff game, but I feel like I can still generally remember the Cardiff game quite well. And there's a few other games as well that we could have looked at, but I think we just have them quite high in our heads. Maybe the Derby 1-1 game, and that's another game that's a shout for perhaps the most complete performance of our season, or under Bielsa, but that's another discussion. But we went back to the Stoke game, which I think is probably our best performance under Bielsa, with the exception perhaps of the first half against Arsenal, which was just glorious, not least because it was against Arsenal. But thoughts on obviously Bielsa felt a lot more comfortable this season to go with the 3-3-1-3 formation from the off. I think it was February where we won all of the games in the month, five games.
Yeah,
I think we played 3-3-1-3 in four of those games. Partly, I think, because it was against weaker teams who were tending to play two strikers up front. So it's teams like Huddersfield and Birmingham, yeah, again, would have been. Maybe not Birmingham, but maybe Reading. I don't know. I can't remember, but I can't even remember where I was going from here. But the reason I was talking about this is because I wanted to talk about tactical flexibility. We've even seen a 3-5-2. Hybrid formation that came in a few times, particularly at the beginning of the season, which we haven't seen as much of. But this was an example of one of those formations. So I think Stoke also played 3-5-2, but what we got was a sort of weird hybrid with a back three. Calvin Phillips as the central centre-back, Ben White on the right and Berardi on the left. So this was when Cooper was still out. And then we had Dallas as the right wing-back and Alioski as the left wing-back, but with Dallas playing quite... inverted, so he's sort of playing the same role that Forshaw played in pre-season against Cagliari as a sort of like left wing back slash central midfielder. And then we had, because of the result of Alioski being the wide left wing back, Harrison could push a lot further forward and was almost playing as a striker in front of Bamford, who was sitting a little bit deep. And so you'd see Harrison going from one side of the field to the other, pressing the ball, which was quite fascinating. And what really struck me, I think, most about this game was just how much better the understanding was amongst the team members about moving between systems, because Calvin Phillips is playing as a central centre back out of possession, but in possession he's pushing forward, and then the wing backs are sort of being a lot more responsible defensively in that situation. Yeah. And so it's really quite fascinating just how the tactical understanding that the players have. This was, Ayling wasn't even playing in this game, I don't think. This is when he was still out, but...
Yeah, injured.
Yeah, and I think it made me really aware of how much Ayling, doing this weird to talk about Ayling in a game where he wasn't playing, but it made me realise just how effective Ayling has become as an attacking player. From that first game against Stoke that he played in the Bielsa tenure to this sort of season where he's playing as a fullback slash wingback, a real attacking threat. And even just talking about, we talk a lot now about how we overload to isolate. We build up on the right hand side and then try and get the ball wide left. I think again a lot of that's to do with having Harrison as an out ball. But really incredible how Ayling has come on in leaps and bounds as an attacking player. And so much of that is to do with, I think, tactical awareness.
Definitely. I think Ayling has almost, at times, he's been an overlapping centre-back.
Yeah.
Which is interesting because I remember when we played Sheffield United last season, Bielsa talked about respecting Chris Wilder for making... the overlapping centre-backs tactic work, because he said, I've tried it in the past and I've never been able to sort of make it work. But this season, I think he has made it work with Ayling.
Yep.
At times where we've been sort of playing a 3-3-1-3, he's popping up beyond Dallas, beyond Costa, Hernandez, whoever's playing sort of in front of him. He's popping up beyond them, but then he's still slotting back in defensively as a centre back. He has been sort of a low key shout for player of the season, I think.
I've just got written here Adam Forshaw. even at this point, I think you can see that Forshaw is not moving properly. But even still, like, just everything he does is right. I think that's perhaps why Forshaw is underrated by people, because if you watch what he does, everything he does seems completely achievable by any footballer. But I think it's just his level of consistency, his movement, his ability to just do the right thing, his ability to evade a press, and to just be in the right place at the right time all the time, consistently, is what makes him a great player. I've got that goal written down. I'm not entirely sure why.
How could you not know what you mean by that? You mean the one where Forshaw comes and steals the ball, pulls it inside, plays it into Harrison's feet, who just pops it off with one touch. Hernandez with the ball
through to
just
Dallas.
Yeah, literally takes out three players. Dallas runs onto it, side foot in the corner. Which for me, that
the best Bielsa goal.
For all the talk around the Ayling volley, the Roberts goal against Hull. This goal for me is still goal of the season.
Because it just encapsulates everything.
Yeah, it's everything. It's the one touch passing, it's the way that Forshaw first of all goes and gets the ball.
It's the third man run.
It's the third man run, and then the weight of pass from Hernandez. Yeah. I don't think anyone else is making that pass.
You watch it,
and he knows Dallas is going to be there. He doesn't even seem to look for him. He just knows he's going to be there.
But he arrives at it so perfectly. Like, if you watch that goal back, it's the fact that it's just too far ahead of Jack Butland in goal, and it's just at a point where Dallas is going to be ahead of the defender. And it's just, everything is just perfect. It's just like the meeting of minds. It's like everything has to happen in just the right way, and it does, and it's just perfect. And yeah, you've got the Pablo pass to Alioski for the third goal as well, which is a gorgeous goal as well. So I think for me, that's why this was the maybe the defining performance of the Bielsa tenure so far. And it's just a shame that we lost Forshaw, I think, because I think we would have seen a lot more of these kinds of intense control games where Leeds just comfortably win and that's that. But we've been talking for an hour now. I'm sure we could talk for an hour more about some of these games. But I'd be interested to hear like what you enjoyed most about the experience of going back and watching all of these games over again, and whether or not you think you changed your mind about how the development of the team has happened under Bielsa.
I think the main thing that I felt was just enjoyment. I just really loved going back and watching the progression of the team, so seeing how we've sort of got better as it went on. But in watching the first game again, I was sort of transported back to how I felt when I saw that team perform in that way, that I didn't think you could pull off pressing like this in the Championship. I didn't expect Roof to lead the line in the way that he did, which is something we haven't actually really talked about so far, but he did it in a really different way to how Bamford has done this season, where Bamford has engaged defenders a lot more, and sort of he's received the ball back to goal quite a bit, whereas Roof was always trying to run into channels, and it was all about movement in behind. He did it really well. And then, yeah, just going through all of these games, it's just like just real. I feel very grateful that we have Marcelo Bielsa as our manager. We play amazing football. We could have talked about a lot more games than this. So, yeah, I feel really fortunate that we've had this time, and I hope it continues.
Yeah, and I think for me what's so interesting is the fact that as fans we seem to think that last season was amazing because of the context, and as a result of that I think a couple of our friends have been saying, oh, you know, last season was great because we didn't expect anything, and this season has been torture because we've been expected to win every time.
There is some truth to that, for sure.
Of course. But I do think that it does mean that a lot of us have actually failed to see that phase of development, that has that constant development that's happening, and this team has just got better and better and better in terms of the tactics, and it's just quite good to see. So I think I would recommend that you go back and watch an early game, even if it's like one of the games that were good, like the early Stoke game, and you'll get a sense of just how far Leeds have come in that 2 year spread. I don't have anything else to say other than thank you for listening. Do stay safe. We're going to try and get as much stuff as we can out during this period on our Patreon account, and we'll also have other stuff going out for free as well. Do keep any ideas that you have, fun ideas of things that we can do coming in. It can be tough to think of interesting things to do during the break, but with football not being on, but we are keen to have a look back maybe on some early games, some older games, maybe some of the big games from the 90s and 2000s, maybe even before that if you wanted to. And we could even do a podcast where we watch through a game together and just have a chat through about it, and then you can watch it back, the game back, with our commentary over the top. I don't know if that would work, but just anything like that. There's plenty of stuff that we've obviously got plenty of time to do stuff, so do let us know. But again, same sort of ending that we always ended. Do check out our Twitter account, which is at All Stats Aren't We. Check out our Medium. All of those posts can be found at All Stats Aren't We on Medium as well. And also do check out our Patreon. Obviously, a lot of the stuff that we do requires that we have paid subscriptions to things, and so the money that you do send along our way is very helpful, and you can do that for as little as $1 a month. But yeah, other than that, I guess we are both going to wish that you stay safe in the meantime. Look after yourselves. Try not to go outside if you can. And make sure you listen to plenty of Leeds content while you're inside. But thank you, Josh, for coming on tonight.
Always a pleasure, mate.
No worries. And we will speak to you again soon.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.